Bitmain is funding core development, but also Bitcoin Cash.
Yeah. Although Bitcoin Cash, 98% of the Bitcoin Cash code is based on Bitcoin Core. So they probably expect if you improve Bitcoin Core, you indirectly improve Bitcoin Cash.
Hello, welcome to episode 51 of The Bitcoin Game. I'm Rob Mitchell. Since my last episode, we've seen the 2x fork called off, and just when it seemed everyone could relax for a few minutes, the Bitcoin Cash fork went on a full-scale blitz. Some claim it's an organic move triggered by 2x being called off, whereas others see it as an attack propped up mostly by Bitcoin Cash bigwigs. Interestingly, Roger Ver spoke here at the Los Angeles Bitcoin meetup, basically kicking off the dramatic past couple of days. The previous session of this particular LA Bitcoin meetup was a talk with Bitcoin Core developer Jonas Schnelli. I went to hear him speak and only as a last minute thought, figured I'd plop my phone in front of him and record the talk. So it's not the highest quality audio, but I thought the content was interesting enough to air it as a podcast episode. Jonas's presentation is called The Bitcoin Core Project Explained. What is Bitcoin Core and who is behind it? Note the original recording included a lot of audience discussion and was super long, so I edited it down to try to capture just the more compelling information from Jonas. Here we go.
I'm surprised how many people showed up today. Estimated maybe 15 or 20. Then I saw it was registered by 75 people, so usually all of them come. So great to see you all. My name is Jonas Schnelli. I'm one of the core developer. I got into Bitcoin in 2011, and I'm working full-time on the Bitcoin protocol, especially the reference implementation Bitcoin Core, since 2013. This is a meetup. I'm going to have a presentation, which is roughly half an hour. I hope it's okay. I tried to make it not too technically. I'm a technical guy, so I tried to keep it on a higher level. But after the talk, because it's a meetup, I hope we can kind of have a discussion, maybe a Q&A at the beginning, and then move it over to some discussions between you guys. So it's not a traditional talk where I'm talking a lot and you're just listening. So the topic of my talk is what is Bitcoin Core and who controls it. For that, I like to go a little bit back into the history. What is Bitcoin actually? It was invented by the pseudonym Satoshi Nakamoto. For those who know it already, yeah, you can listen again. It was invented or first created in 2009 by Satoshi Nakamoto, which we don't know who he is or what group stands behind it. And it's just a paper. It was just a paper, like a specification of something that could work. And we were glad that he also came up with the reference implementation, like some software. And so it was called Bitcoin, might be uppercase C, looks a bit traditional. So it's an open source project. He just wrote a specification and gave us some code. That's all he did. And he improved it until 2011. That's not Satoshi. That's Dorian, just a random guy. And even that one is not Satoshi. That's Craig Wright, probably a hoaxer and scammer. So, Bitcoin Core is the continuation of that project Satoshi Nakamoto gave us. It was always called Bitcoin until somebody started to rename it to Bitcoin Core, which was initiated by Mike Hearn, the guy who left the space. And since then, we have to deal with it's no longer Bitcoin, it's Bitcoin Core. It's a product or a piece of software in the space of Bitcoin. Initially, it was Bitcoin. But I think it's good that there's now a differentiation between Bitcoin and the reference implementation. But the way how it was born was it was always Bitcoin. So today there's a lot of things going on. There's roughly 15 code contributors, but still roughly 7 developers do 80% of the work. Still a small project if you compare it to Linux, which is one of the biggest open source projects. For, we have to say, it's now a 100 billion economy. Driven, or the main infrastructure is mainly driven by 7 guys, which you see an initial problem probably.
Are you one of the 50?
Glad you brought that up. So this is the source code administration history. So we have Satoshi Nakamoto, who initially created Bitcoin Core and then gave it along to Gavin Andreessen, who gave it on, gave on the rights to Vladimir von der Laan, who gave the rights to Gregor Maxwell, Peter Rulli, myself, and Marco Falk. These are the maintainers. These are not like people with special rights. It's a burden to be one of them because you have to judge proposals. You put your hand into the fire to merge something, or if you merge malicious code, guess how long you'll be on the list? Probably 10 minutes. So maybe we need to go back to the point, what is Bitcoin actually? It's more or less a set of rules. It's the rules we all agree this is Bitcoin. Like there's a limit of 21 million Bitcoins that ever being created. It's just a number. We can change it. I can take the source code and change that number to 100 million and say it's Bitcoin. But then it depends if you agree or not. It's a consensus system. It's what we all think is Bitcoin. And you probably follow the press that there are different viewpoints what Bitcoin is. There's maybe Bitcoin, maybe you've heard of Bitcoin Cash, Segwit 2x. So this is what happens in consensus systems. People have different viewpoints. There's probably forks in groups of people who think what is Bitcoin, which is something we have to deal with it right now. But really important to know, you probably know that, but I repeat that, there's no central server. Bitcoin is not run by an organization. There's no central authority. There's no guy who controls Bitcoin. There is even no guy who have invented it. There was Satoshi Nakamoto, but I'm glad he disappeared. So there's no like leadership structure in place. There's no ownership. Bitcoin has no copyright. There's no brand. There's no copyrights, no patents, or some people claim to have patents, but that's probably not true. And again, no leadership, which is important. It's also an important differentiation to other coins, like the second largest open source coin is probably Ethereum, where we have clear leadership. There's a guy who invented it. If he says A, people say A. That's a big differentiation to Bitcoin, where we have no leader. Which I think is a good thing because it opens up the discussion. So then, what is Bitcoin Core? I often read in the press, Bitcoin Core doesn't follow that. Bitcoin Core hasn't implemented that. Bitcoin Core went the wrong way. But actually, Bitcoin Core is an open source process. So it's just an implementation of those consensus rules, those rules we think defines Bitcoin, like the 21 million coins and stuff like that. But on top, it's not only the implementation of these consensus rules, it's also the peer-to-peer network, like how we distribute transactions. It's also a wallet. You can store your Bitcoins in Bitcoin Core, which is not something you need to define a protocol. And there's also enterprise-level APIs if you want to interact with those systems. So important to know, again, Bitcoin Core is the continuation of the Bitcoin project started by Satoshi Nakamoto. It's completely open source. Everyone can join. There's no leadership. And still there is 98% of all active nodes. All the peers we see on the network are based on Bitcoin Core. Mostly of them are Bitcoin Core. Some of them are code forks created out of Bitcoin Core, including Bitcoin Unlimited, Bitcoin XT, Bitcoin ABC. Then the question is, who is behind Bitcoin Core? If people say Bitcoin Core hasn't followed that scaling path, they don't agree on what we think, who is behind Bitcoin Core? So it's an open source project. Everyone can join today. There's no way to say you're not allowed or you're allowed to be to contribute to Bitcoin Core. So all you have to do is create a proposal. If you think you can do something to improve Bitcoin Core because it's open source, you can do a proposal. And there will always be a discussion about the proposal. If it's just dumb, if you say I want to increase the 21 million cap limit to whatever number, the discussion will be short. But if you come up with a clever solution to scale, there is no way that somebody can say we don't like you, that's why we close your proposal. Because it's public. Not a single one of the maintainer can close a proposal with a reasonable attempt, because it would look unscientifically. You cannot just close something because you don't like the author. So, as I said, every proposal is public. Everyone can comment on a proposed change. And reasonable changes will be merged. If there's a reasonable attempt that makes sense, scientifically proven, there's no way of not merging this, because it wouldn't make sense. It's an open source project again. And then often the question is, which proposals are getting merged? How do we decide to do a change in the Bitcoin Core, either the protocol or the client? As I already said, if there is a reasonable amount of accepts by other developers, we're going to merge the proposal. So there is no way of, again, saying we don't like this person, we don't like the company who is behind the proposal. It's always about what options, what opinions we got from the other developers in the community.
How do you decide what's reasonable?
The contributors who comment on the proposal do define what's reasonable and what not.
I mean, a reasonable amount. How do you decide, okay, what amount has been reached and now you're going to incorporate?
That depends. I mean, if you're just changing a non-significant icon in the UI, we don't need accepts, X from all the developers. But if it's like consensus change, then it will be, it's not black and white, so it's pretty much a gray or kind of a, it depends on what change you want to propose. Again, who can merge? That's those four maintainers, and those maintainers can give those rights to other maintainers. It's not a privilege, it's again a burden. Because if you can merge, you have to merge, because you want to make people expect that you merge if a proposal is at a certain stage. So you have to do the work, you have to follow all these proposals, you have to test it, and once you merge it, you kind of put the hand into the fire. If it's not good, people will come back to you and say, why have you merged this? Then you need to protect that in some ways.
Quick question.
Yeah.
Do all four of you need to do it together simultaneously to validate?
Nope. Every one of those can merge every proposal.
Thank you.
But again, merging is not critical. What really is critical is the users. Like people, companies, individuals who are miners, who are running the software. I mean, Bitcoin Core could kind of go into a direction where people don't agree, then they wouldn't run it. Then all the attempts of changing the Bitcoin code would be useless. And so it's ultimately users, individuals, companies, miners, who decide what Bitcoin is. And some people think it's the miners who decide, But they're just playing a game, how who is going to get and mine the next block and get the reward. It's not really crucial for Bitcoin. I mean, miners are crucial, but it's not crucial that we have like hundreds of thousands. Individuals and companies are probably the one who will define what Bitcoin is, and the miners, they will follow the money incentives. As I said, everyone can continue its own fork of Bitcoin Core. Zcash and other cryptocurrency has done that in a more significant way. Bitcoin ABC, Bitcoin Unlimited are cold forks, and also consensus forks. Cold forks is something we like to see. We like to see more diverse pieces of software that define the current state of Bitcoin. But what's critical, if you fork the code and also do changes to the consensus system, if you fork the code and say, I'm going to change the block limit, which is one of the controversial topics, or again, if you say you're going to change the 21 million coin limit, then this is controversial. You can no longer say this is Bitcoin, because you have kind of changed the underlying elements, what does define Bitcoin. So, how do we change consensus rules? Because either we say Bitcoin is as it is, we don't change anything, but then people come up and say, okay, once again, there's like these four transaction per second limit, while Visa and MasterCard, they can do up to 50,000 per second, and Bitcoin can handle four, maybe now they can handle eight. So how do we make it better? So there's even a process for that. It's called the BIP, Bitcoin Improvement Process, where you can write a paper, have it discussed, and that can lead to changes of those consensus rules. But that's really the holy grail. That's the critical part. There you can drive Bitcoin in a different direction. Either you drive it to a more centralized piece of a protocol, or you keep it really censorship resistant. So this is difficult. That's where all the current discussions are happening. Where do we want to see Bitcoin going towards? And maybe you've heard from the press there are soft forks and hard forks. Hard forks are hard chain cuts where everyone has to upgrade at a certain point in time, and everyone has to gather to update the software at the same time, which is hard to achieve, while soft fork allow you to have a transition period where your running software still does a valuable job during the time of this graceful upgrade period. So this is the interesting part. So Bitcoin Core is an open source project. It's probably one of the main infrastructure pieces of the 100 billion economy. Maybe today it's only 92 million, depends on the exchange rate. So who is behind that? So there's companies willing to fund or to help developing the core infrastructure piece. So the ones who get really bad press all the time, Blockstream, they no longer, I mean, they probably support up to 15-20% of the code of Bitcoin Core. The current dominant player is Chaincode Labs, a company based in New York. Bitmain does sponsor some of the developers, and the MIT Digital Currency, and that's really it. So I would love to see like a lot of other company names here, especially the ones who really make money with Bitcoin, like the bigger players, Blockstream.info, BitPay, and all these bigger companies. They sadly no longer or were never really on this page. And I think they claim or they say Bitcoin hasn't followed our needs. That's not something you can say in open source projects. Either you actively try to roll in this way, or you create another one. But just say, they couldn't be, our investors are not, are unhappy because Core didn't follow. That's just, in my opinion, a bad excuse for an open source project. Yeah, please.
Is this information anywhere? Can we see flowing in and out of Core?
It's hard to see who pays who. Even, I mean, there are a lot of new contributors. We don't know if they are paid or if they just volunteer their precious time. Also, it changes, like some people went from here to here, maybe from here to here, we don't know. So that's hard to find out, and also to prove, you cannot prove that. While you can see who is related to what and who contributes what amount of code, that's something you can follow. Yeah?
So when you say resources, these are companies are putting the resources, what sort of resources are they putting at Bitcoin Core? For example, are there actually employees of these companies who are paid to be developers for Bitcoin Core,
yeah,
or are they putting other resources as well?
These companies really pay developers because there's nothing much outside of development done in Bitcoin Core. There's a web page, there's a little bit of documentation that's paid, but I would say 98% of Bitcoin Core is defined in code, so it's about developers. And those companies, they sponsor developers, or they put resources into these projects.
So Bitmain is funding Core development, but also Bitcoin Cash.
Yeah. Although Bitcoin Cash, 98% of the Bitcoin Cash code is based on Bitcoin Core.
Right.
So they probably expect if you improve Bitcoin Core, you indirectly improve Bitcoin Cash. Because 98% of the code base is shared.
Yeah. Is there much scrutiny to code submitted from the Bitmain developers?
Sorry, say it again.
Is there more scrutiny on the code submitted by the Bitmain developers?
No, I hope not.
Okay.
No, I think it's, if you're on a 100 plus employee company, you probably had to do your homework on what risk elements you are building up your company, where you have to put resources into to eliminate risks which could hurt your profit model. So, and I think Bitmain had to do this at some point.
I'm sorry if I missed this, Jonas, but who do you work for?
I'm here.
So what you can't see, listeners, is Jonas just pointed to Bitmain on his presentation screen.
I don't work for them.
They pay you.
Yeah, I don't work for them. They just sponsor me.
Understood.
I have no contract with them in a way where they can tell me what to do.
Who were you with you before Bitmain? Because... just in general, before, how did you get to Bitmain? I guess that's my question.
I was paying, or I was investing in myself by contributing more than a year full-time to Bitcoin Core without any money.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so cool.
Yeah.
And then Bitmain told me,
okay,
do you want to get paid for that? And obviously, you get a rise in your mouth at some point.
Sure.
That's why I had to... and also digital currency, they have open positions, and they still look for people to sponsor. So it's also an option. More questions?
Yeah. Maybe I missed it. What platform are you using, or what specific languages are you using to build those cores, or on this Roblox, for example?
Bitcoin Core?
Yeah.
Bitcoin Core is C++. It's boring, old-fashioned software development. So the new kids, they probably want to speak Go and Rust and all these new languages. But Core is based on traditional software models.
So I guess since nobody else has mentioned it, I'll just bring it out there. So as far as like the block size goes, I mean, you know, I mean, if I'm framing the debate right, it seems like kind of, you know, Core has been much more resistant to simple increases in the block size versus other implementations like Bitcoin Cash.
Yeah.
What do you see as the big risks versus benefits of just, say, like what might maybe happening at the end of October, doubling 2x, you know, 2 megabytes? Like, Like, why do you think that's a very risky thing or a risk neutral thing or something we should do? Like, where?
Yeah, I mean, everyone has its own opinion. I won't speak for Core. I can't speak for myself here. And I think the main value of Bitcoin is not that I can send you money. It's that nobody can stop it. That it's fully sensor assistant. And this is only possible if the burden is low to run and be participate in the network. Okay. And right now you need to have a more or less powerful computer to do that. You cannot like run it in the background as you can do with other software. And I think the more we load on top of what it already requires to run a full node, the less censorship resistant we get. And is it worth to sacrifice censorship resistant to do 16 instead of 8 transactions? Does it change the way how Bitcoin can scale? From 8 to 16, I would say twice as much transactions doesn't change the model how we can use Bitcoin. It would change if we could use 100,000 per second. But that would mean you have to have like supercomputer to run a Bitcoin node, which then would centralize everything, and at the end it's 5 or 10 players who control Bitcoin. Then the game would be lost, we could start again, or we would have recreated the banking system in some ways, which is,
sure,
in my opinion, not the thing we should try to achieve.
If a company wanted to sponsor a developer, just dedicate money to let people work on it full time, what's the best way to go about that?
That's problematic because money is there, people are willing to spend money, but that's actually not enough. What you need to do is you need to find a developer, and you need to convince him that this is a good thing. You need to teach him, you need to give him infrastructure, give him a team, talk with him. Money alone doesn't solve that. We have the Bitcoin, what is called Bitcoin Development Grant. Nobody really applies, writes applications to get money from the grant. Money is there. It's not a problem. I don't know best way how to solve it.
Money could hire project managers, people to organize these things. You know,
yeah,
you
this
create
is
a structure like that.
Slowly happening. But somehow, I'm also surprised. I'm a developer. I'm not like teaching teams or teach teams what to do. I'm surprised that this slide is still mainly with 4 pictures. I hope some people will step in and try to make it bigger.
Do you feel a lot of these core developers are doing out of their passion, love for what Bitcoin is, or rather, I mean, not really for the money?
Yeah.
I think money isn't the...
I think to work on that level, I worked 22 years in software development, and when I started to contribute code to Bitcoin Core, I had to learn a lot about how to interact in this project. Because when you write software in a corporate project, you solve a problem, you write an addition, done. And here it's completely different. You write a proposal. Every line of that proposal will be reviewed. People get comments. You need to have like a hard skin or a thick skin to deal with that, because people really piss on your code and say, you know, this is just not how you do it. And you never get it in the corporate environment. Maybe a little bit, but not in that scale. So large proposals have no chance because it's too much to review. Nobody will review it, and if nobody reviews it, it will never get merged. So it's extremely slow process. So without passion and love, coming back to your question, without passion and love and extreme interest in Bitcoin Core, you will fail to contribute to this project. And people have tried that. And that's maybe also why we have only a few slides here and missing BitPay and other companies, because they don't know how to deal with that. They cannot put the junior here because they will spend a lot of hours doing worthless things because they don't have the passion to keep up with the speed.
Is this an AA meeting or am I in the wrong building?
What was that?
Is this AA? I'm assuming an AA group?
No, it's Bitcoin.
Oh, sorry. I'm just
kind. No worries. No worries.
You're
Joseph here, if you haven't met Joseph, Joseph is doing a great job. He's one of the hardware wallet vendors. If you want to have a secure way how to store your bitcoins, Joseph is your guy.
Actually, I wanted to mention you're the founder of this company.
Okay, that's also
true. Well,
there
are only four wallet makers in the world, so Digital Bitbox out of Switzerland is one of them. Happy to visit you guys last week or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Ledger, Trezor, and KeepKey. These are the four main players that are certified by Bitcoin.org.
Yeah.
So these wallets should be really safe to use, and obviously he's one of the founders for this wallet. If you guys have a need, I bought a few today. I can't bring too many, so you save at least $20 in shipping because I carry these back from Switzerland. So.
Yeah.
It's still
over 60.
Yeah.
60
bucks?
Yeah.
I don't want to advertise them too much, so.
Okay. That's why I have kind of question.
Talk to him.
This is a convenience thing.
Yeah. So that's the core of all this. So how many merges per day and how long is it?
Oh, yeah. That brings me to. I will come back to that to the next slide. So the stats of 2016 is. There is 570 contributors, including the one who say, it's not working, please fix, or I have a problem with XYZ. That's also a contribution. There are actually 47, or there were actually 47 code contributors. And we have roughly 4.5 commits a day. It's actually merged, 4.5 commits per day are merged. So in 2016, we had 1,500 roughly proposals created. We have 41 comments on all these proposals a day. So if you are a maintainer, you get like 41 emails a day at least, and you have to read them to know what's going on. So at some point, the project needs to be split up, but right now it's a single code base.
What is your attitude towards the other currencies that have kind of grown up out of Bitcoin that are traded on the market and the technology that's coming out, like, you know, you have stuff like Ethereum and then you have like developers like EOS and you have all these other people and I mean, we go on and on. Do you have any opinions about those coins and their contribution to Bitcoin? How does Bitcoin feel about it? I mean, like, Bitcoin is not a person, but.
I mean, I don't have the time to really deeply follow the other coins. Ethereum is probably the second well-known coin. And what Vitalik did, the inventor of Ethereum, was he took the current Bitcoin state and thought, okay, how can I improve it? How can I make it better? And I think he did a good job, but also on the way how he improved the Bitcoin protocol, there were like new problems. He has to deal now with new problems. And from a technical perspective, I think Ethereum has worse problems in scaling than Bitcoin has. Although people don't look at the technical details too much with Ethereum. It's more an investment thing. And or my perspective on that is it's more an investment thing. But we'll see. I think there's a future for Ethereum. There's a future for multiple cryptocurrencies.
I totally agree with you that Bitcoin's main value proposition is like censorship resistance, store of value. And there's maybe like one thing that it doesn't have that some other coins have, which is like complete fungibility or anonymous transactions. And how do you see those features coming to Bitcoin? Do you ever see them being merged into Core, or do you think they'll be like on a layer above the main Bitcoin blockchain?
Yeah, really the strong fungibility options, the confidential options, they require a lot of changes to the current statements we have. And as I already said, that things go really slow in Bitcoin Core or Bitcoin Protocol in general. To achieve those goals, it requires a couple of years, in my opinion. So we all work towards fungibility, but we know it either takes a lot of time or it will never happen, or happen on the second layer or in another coin. Also, there's the problem of money laundering. So governments probably are okay with Bitcoin because it's not anonymous, so it's kind of There is no fungibility options in Bitcoin per se. So that's why they kind of go behind or they trying to stop Monero or even have a look at Zcash. So those coins are much more secure or much more private. Obviously, we want that. I guess everyone wants the privacy aspect increasing or CT privacy aspect increasing in Bitcoin, but it's just difficult technically without breaking Bitcoin and bootstrapping another coin. Yeah?
I'm interested in your last slide after going to get back to it.
Oh, that's good. Thanks for reminding me. So there are actually alternatives to Bitcoin Core. Also, Satoshi, the inventor of Bitcoin Core, he said we need alternative implementations. It's bad if there's only one browser, if there's only Netscape or only Internet Explorer or only Firefox. It's always bad to have a situation like that. So there are alternative implementations like Bitcoin, BTCD, or forks out of Bitcoin Core, which are not purely alternatives. But sadly, those projects never got kind of a bigger team. They have different review, peer review policies. They probably have bugs we don't know of because it's such a complex piece of software. They also have almost no adoption because would you run a software that includes risks to make financial gain at some point? First thing you would try to is eliminate risks. So you take the piece that's best tested, even if it's maybe not so feature rich. That's why it's hard to get out of this monolithic culture.
You're a Bitcoiner, but you have the iconic Bitcoin keychain? Support this podcast and own the Bitcoin keychain you've probably seen hundreds of times on sites like CoinDesk, Bitcoin Magazine, Ars Technica, Vice, Popular Mechanics, Engadget, and many, many more. Just go to btckeychain.com. That's btckeychain.com.
There's a lot of comments about how governments are trying to either come up with their own cryptocurrencies. They're calling it cryptocurrencies, Russia, and so on. Yeah. Any comments on how you see government regulations?
Yeah, I think today I read a good article that really nobody really understands Bitcoin, including myself. I think we all think we know what Bitcoin is, but I think most of us we actually have no clue, and we are trying to find out what it is, including governments. And what really is crazy that Venezuela, as an example, there are some forces who are considering Bitcoin as an alternative to their fiat. And I think coming up with a government-based cryptocurrency is pretty hard because you kind of thrive through all the properties that make Bitcoin valuable, like the censorship resistance property, the people pay people property. So I'm not sure if you can come up with the kind of a country-based cryptocurrency.
Right.
But maybe it's possible.
Yeah, well, that's what seems to be very confusing, that the governments think that it's like they're just digitizing a fiat currency versus creating a real...
Yeah, I think they're all experimenting. When we had the internet in the 90s, we had like the internet coming up, and then there was Microsoft and CompuServe creating their own closed internet. They thought this is the better way. We copy the internet and make it better. But all these attempts failed miserably because it's not the spirit what closed people wanted. Like it was closed. It was like the kindergarten versus the forest. And obviously the forest won at the end. Yeah?
So you mentioned that you don't think Bitcoin could scale to the level where people would be buying coffee, for example, common everyday transactions. What would you say are the major obstacles to scaling to that level for Bitcoin?
I mean, why it's not possible, I think the space, because the system does transact every transaction to every peer, so it's extremely inefficient. If I pay you for a coffee, we have like these big waves of transaction of our transactions got distributed all over the network. Everyone has to verify the transaction. It's a lot of security. Even if it got into a block, I once calculated security. One transaction is similar to, I think, 34 kilowatt hours of power. So if I put that power on top of I pay you for a coffee, it's just way too much security. And increasing the blocks would allow more transactions, but it will always sacrifice decentralization. So if it would increase to a level where it will make sense to pay you for a coffee, we would have, like, we would need specialized systems for nodes, and then we would reinvent the banking system by having banking infrastructure, maybe 10 players, that's it, because it costs like 10 million to start such a business, or maybe 100 players, which is still centralized in my opinion.
So is the main problem that every transaction has to be replicated on such a wide scale?
Yeah.
That if we're having so many transactions, it would clog up the network? Is that what you're
Yeah,
saying?
It will just not be efficient anymore. It will not be possible to mine in a way to compete with each other. And I think what really makes sense is probably to have like these payment channels where not everyone needs to know. I mean, if I pay you for a coffee, you're probably not interested that everyone verifies the transaction because it's not so important. You can have a risk of 0.01% that I scam you. So it's, you need a different level of security, which payment channels would probably offer this in a way where we can have 100,000 transactions per second.
Would you please tell us more about payment channels? Like, how do they work, and how are they actually connected to the Bitcoin core code?
Yeah, so to make it simple, it's more like a hop payment where I can pay, let's say I pay you and you just forward the payment into that direction where you know his at the end point will be. So it's not like I pay and we spread the transaction over the whole network. And it will be secured by a Bitcoin transaction. The channel opening and the channel closing will also create a Bitcoin transaction. So we can kind of start an initial, let's say you're an employer and I'm an employee, so we can set up a channel and have kind of a checkbook between us and then close it over a single Bitcoin transaction.
So to clarify, you're saying, for an example, there's one Bitcoin transaction, but related to that are a number of like side transactions that then result in
single Bitcoin transaction. Yeah. Initially, they're secured by the single transaction, and at the end point, the settlement will also be done on Bitcoin.
But how does that plug into the Bitcoin core code?
You need to verify the initial Bitcoin transaction. So you need to have also a Bitcoin node at some point to know the channel was set up properly. Nobody has screwed, nobody has left the channel. So you need Bitcoin as your security clearance of the whole channel setup. So it's kind of, as I said, it's a second layer. So you have Bitcoin and you create a second layer on top of that, while you always have to look into the Bitcoin blockchain to understand if the channel is secure or not.
How far in time do you think until something workable like that?
Yeah, Lightning Group has published their beta release or alpha release of their desktop client. It's happening soon. So soon is probably 1 to 2 years.
Lightning is a class of a type of payment channel. I mean, it's an implementation of an idea of payment channels, which you know, can operate in a more or less trusted manner. I think. You know, you talk about having to. You're not necessarily like leaving your money with someone in the way you would with a bank necessarily, because you could construct sort of smart contract type things where like you have a certain amount of time elapses and payment doesn't get claimed. Like you have a collateral that returns back to you, or you know, you can play around with a bunch of different arrangements like that. So it's not.
I would say Lightning is more or less a specification how to do such channels, but there are also different approaches, like Founder from blockchain.info, which initially took the Lightning specs and said we are Lightning compatible, but they had their own cooked protocol. And yeah, I think Lightning is a good example. Christian Decker wrote the micro channel transactions, which then he kind of moved into the Lightning direction, so it's mostly the devs work on the same protocol right now.
which makes sense in terms of resources.
So a lot of times you hear Bitcoin compared to email. I was wondering if you could shed some light, because this is where my ability to kind of conceive where the direction of applications are going.
I think the main value in autonomous organizations, that's probably where it will lead to. But to come back to that email example, I think it's a good example. Email, in my opinion, is a famed protocol. It will land at some point where we no longer really use it in daily use. We have stopped using email for certain use cases where we use Signal, WhatsApp, messages today. And email has failed in a way because it was no longer doable for an individual to send an email. I tell you the details now. If you are going to send me an email, you probably use Gmail or you use some sort of provider that's pretty much centralized. And under the hood, they will use email. But you, as end users, your input way is no longer based on the email protocol done in the 80s. So it has failed because Google can really control a lot of emails. They can censor emails in a way where it's really significant. And if you can control like the five top email providers, you can really hurt the email system, which is a failed protocol because the idea of the internet was a decentralized network. And yeah.
But isn't the enemy of decentralization like that user error and kind of difficulty of interfacing directly with those more granular systems that power the internet? I mean, the whole reason nobody uses email is because it's probably pretty difficult or at least inefficient.
Yeah, it is difficult. That's why I can draw some analogies to the block size debate. If we make it more difficult to run Bitcoin, we may end up in the same situation with email. Maybe for email it worked because it's just, can we go out to dinner, or maybe here's my financial plan. You can encrypt, so it's like a different piece of, or this different level than sending $1 million across server borders. So I think for Bitcoin, these properties are way more important than for email. That's why we should really protect or really learn from the failures SMTP email protocol had. Like we draw it away from the user to the operators, which is not it in my point of view.
I was going to ask if you could talk a little bit about what got you into Bitcoin and what the whole process was like for you.
I can tell that. So as I said, somebody hooked me on Bitcoin in 2011 by telling me, have you looked at Bitcoin? And I thought, okay, now this is the next stupid thing we're seeing after Facebook and all these things. No offense. But then I looked deeper into how it's done, how it's working, and because I was interested in software, it really kind of interested me deeply. So I thought, okay, how can I understand it better? Because it's so complex, and I tend to try to understand things by changing things, by, you know, screwdriver here, a bit of oil there. And so I started to contribute to Bitcoin Core, set myself some chores to do, change this, change that, and went down from the visual layer down to where really things happening. And for me, it was like a journey to learn Bitcoin, and maybe now I'm at the level of 50%. So it's, you cannot learn everything, because then at some point you get to the cryptography, which requires 10 years studying math to understand what's going on there. But I got in by interest in the technology, and also at some point I had to buy Bitcoins to play Bitcoins. To play with the Bitcoin. So then I thought, okay, it's also like investing in improving the technology to keep my investment alive or even increase it. And that happened pretty good. And so that's how it started.
I hope you enjoyed that talk. I had learned a lot about Bitcoin Core from my interview with Peter Todd back in February 2016, and I recommend that episode as a pretty good one. But Jonas's talk helped me understand a lot more. You can also catch Jonas Schnelli in last year's Year in Special, episode 40. It's our actually really fun episode if you haven't listened. I'm the BTC Game on Twitter, and you can find show notes for this episode at thebitcoingame.com, on letstalkbitcoin.com, and on SoundCloud. See you next time.
Nothing else than just trying to compete in the Bitcoin game.